Hey, Duncan, thank you for coming in. You do amazing work with Journeys with Purpose, and you definitely are enthused about the natural world and wilderness and travel. And with Journeys with Purpose, you've done some just great work, and you kind of continue to do so. And I just love the fact that you got this award for Best for the World Environment. Not that long ago, and that just continues. So we're going to weave some of your story, your zoology background and how you got into this. What were the inflection points in your life? What do you do now? What's really exciting? Where do you want to take the world? Where do you think there's issues, challenges we need to meet, and so on. We got about 50 minutes, and then I'll at the end of that, let's say 48 minutes, I'll ask for sort of like your recommendations, but. It's just a natural dialogue, and again, you give so much across so many dimensions. So thank you for coming in and sharing your insights with the audience.
Oh, Stephen, it's my absolute pleasure, and thank you for having me today. Nice to be here.
So Duncan, I actually measure over the last 30, 40 years who is my audience. Now I do get professors and the academic people because I come from that world. In fact, I used to teach math and computer science and things like that, or in computing for a long time. But really, the top five roles in my audience are founders, co-founders, CEOs, presidents, and board members. Those are the top five, and the number six would be like a professor or engineer or something like that. So you're really speaking to senior people. That's my audience. But there's always a curiosity. You have this remarkable background of being a servant leader, just giving to the world in so many different ways. What were those inflection points when you were like three or five, or maybe when you were in your early grades in school, outside of school, family members, non-family members? What were those three inflection points that made the wonderful person you are today?
Well, it's a great way to start, Stephen, and thank you for asking that because I'm always interested in the why behind what drives people, and it often comes at that early age. So, I'm a Brit. I was born in the south of England many moons ago, back in 1970, and I think my early memories are being surrounded by the natural world and animal life. And I was lucky enough to grow up in that type of environment. And also, it was the emergence of some of the wildlife programs on TV, like David Attenborough, Life on Earth, and also Jacques Cousteau. So that really inspired me, not just in terms of my own environment that I was growing up in, but also the media that I was being shown on TV as well. And that has definitely shaped my life, is the environment that I was surrounded in. And how precious that was to me, and that how much joy and wonder that gave to me. So that is one of them. I think it's also about, the people around us. My mother was very definitely interested in the animal world, natural world, and so on, and that helped shape me. And then I think the next phase for me was in my mid-teens, in the mid-80s. I then started to travel long haul, which was an immense privilege when I think about it and go back to it. But I traveled to Kenya in 1985. I traveled again to Africa in my teens, to Zimbabwe and Zambia, and also India. And these were still in my teens at a time when, a lot of people weren't doing long-haul travel at a young age. So that really helped give me learnings and information and an extraordinary schoolroom in of itself about the world. And diversity and different cultures and different geographies and different environments. And so those were my sort of shaping factors as I was growing up in the 70s and then the 80s. As you know, I studied zoology at university in London. I also did a master's degree as well. So I had that kind of science background combined with travel and a very sort of naturalistic approach to the world as well. So those were my early sort of shaping years. But as you know, I also then had a commercial career.
So that's quite fascinating. So I could see then, that your sort of integration with nature and so on, and that kind of infuse you with a love for nature and protecting nature, which is a big part of your career. And you indicated your mother had a big part in that in terms of who she was and And then traveling. And I've seen that with other change makers, people who are really intertwined with inclusivity and being aware of the world and the differences in the world and being accepting and then trying to preserve it, and not only preserve it, but also to enhance it, to grow it in some sense. They have experiences with other cultures. Well, you mentioned that very early on, you're Africa and India. So you experience differences and then you accommodate those differences, right? You accept those differences and you celebrate those differences.
Absolutely.
And then I can see you then incorporating this into the commercial side. And I find this thing really interesting. You got this Journeys with Purpose as a member of the 1% for the planet, a long run, and a certified B Corp. And as a B Corp, highest scoring travel company, and then of course it's been awarded best for the world environment. Can you just describe all of that? Because people may not know what that means.
Okay, so yes, we are a certified B Corp corporation, a benefit corporation. And when I established Journeys with Purpose back in the late teens, I wanted to make sure that it had really robust foundations established within the business. Because in terms of my own impact work, I determined it was not to channel it through a foundation, but rather to do it through business. So I absolutely consider a gold standard as Patagonia, a business that is looking to conduct good and proper and successful business, but also do the right thing for its social fabric, or the social fabric around it, and also the environment. So, one of those measures was becoming B Corp certified and going through those different hoops around shareholder profiling, workers, community, environment, and so on. And that was a great process of itself because of the questions it asked of the company and how the company was being run. So the rigor with which those questions are asked is fantastic. And I think whether a company becomes B Corp certified or not, they are a really good set of rigorous CSR, ESG questions that one can ask of a company. And so, we put foundations into the business to that extent. One of the aspects of Journeys with Purpose is around what kind of impact that we can create in the world, positive impact, both social, environmental, community focused, and so on. And one of those measures is what is our financial contribution? And I was inspired by, again, the work at Patagonia, the founder of Patagonia, Yves Michelinat, and he is a co-founder of 1% for the Planet. And that is about becoming a member of the organization and giving over 1% of your revenues to good causes throughout a financial year. And so we signed up to that as well. I said to myself, if we are going to establish ourselves as a successful impact company, we need to show leadership. We need to set examples. So that was two important features to put into the business. And what I do see now is that, yes, we can contribute to positive impact, but also on the other side, people coming into a business now want to look more than a living wage, a fair and equitable wage. They want to look for other things in business as well, and particularly young people. They want to understand how a business is contributing to the society and some of these big challenges around the environment and social issues. So that's a little bit more texture on 1% and B Corp certification.
It's fascinating. Now, let's go back into your past. You have this curiosity. You're traveling wild in many different areas, as you mentioned, throughout the world, and that gave you a really great appreciation of differences and the beauty of nature, and so on. But you got a bachelor's, a master's in zoology. So, did you have an early sort of affinity towards science and zoology? I mean, what triggered that interest?
I'll be very honest, Stephen. I think, yes, I am interested in science. That's what I've done. But I would say at least in equal measure, I'm interested in the arts as well. James Lovelock, other scientists, Einstein sum this up very well. It's about the science, but it's also about trusting your intuition as well and trusting your creativity. So yes, I did that. But I was probably more interested in the overall architecture of natural history, rather than the detail of the science and the Latin terminology of taxonomy and so on like that. So it was a mixture, definitely. And that then informs you as to what I did next. Because once I'd finished my academic career, I've had a career really over two halves. The first half of my career in talking to an audience of founders, CEOs, and executives is, I have been in that space. I had when I finished my degrees, I then went to London and worked for a couple of companies. I then had a media and photography agency that became quite successful. We had offices in the UK, in Europe, and America. And again, that extended my journey, if you like, into travel. I traveled an enormous amount with the business. It was very internationally orientated. It was very technology driven. It was on the cusp of technology changes in photography and media. And it also taught me a lot about scaling business and strategy as well, and thinking big. So, as you know, that led me into a number of business networks and organizations, one of which is YPO, and I'm a YPO member, which again helped me with my business and decisions in my life. So that was definitely a sort of shaping part of my life that was a complement to my science and natural history background and traveling through the world. But I resolved to get back to my roots. And so 12 years ago, I'd sold out of that business and I dedicated myself back to what was really at my core, which was the environment sustainability. And that's the chapter I'm on now. And that combination, I think, of science and the travel and different cultures and business has put me in a pretty unique position in the natural world environment, because a lot of people coming or presenting how they can contribute towards biodiversity, climate change through nature-based solutions have come from more from a science background. But I've had that benefit from business as well, and therefore can interface between the science, the action on the ground, and also business dialogue as well.
So I can see then why you get into the photography business where you're capturing nature and through that work you're traveling extensively. I can see how that merges your appreciation for the from the science side of nature, but also the art side, because you said art was a
Absolutely.
combining interest. So that definitely combines the two. And then you start this journeys on purpose, but it's a really interesting thing that you're doing. You're restoring our relationship with the natural world. You're conserving landscapes, harmonizing lives and communities. You're the co-host of these flagship experiences around the world. Can you tell me what that experience is like? How does one get involved in saying, yes, I want to do a journeys in purpose? And then you as co-host, how do you create that experience, and what is that experience like, and what do they walk away with, those people who sign up and say, yes, I want to do one of these with you?
Okay, no, that's we're getting to the sort of core of it now. I'm going to dial back just a little bit as to the origins of Journeys with Purpose or JWP, just to give you a bit of insight into why I set it up and where I believe, my framing and others has changed over time. So obviously, when I was growing up, the natural world was more of a, if you like, featured as a peripheral aspect of our lives. It was perhaps a leisure aspect. And that has obviously shifted over time to where we have come to acknowledge that everything is interconnected. So we have to work with our natural world, with our land, with our seas, in order to protect our ecosystems, our biodiversity, and to help mitigate climate change and so on. So the shift there has been from a sort of perhaps broadly speaking, a peripheral insights into the natural world to actually major critical strategic insights into the natural world. And recently, I believe that one of the outcomes from Davos was describing nature as critical infrastructure, which of course it is. So thinking about it on a very big scale, very strategically. And so just in terms of the origins of JWP, I've done a number of things in the environment sustainability, but I also became aware some years ago of some of these very large ecosystem restoration projects that were underway around the world over the past 20, 30 years. And I'm going to give you one example now because I think it's one of the most profound. It's the work of an organization called Tompkins Conservation, which is out of West Coast America. And this was birthed by Doug Tompkins and Chris Tompkins. Doug and Chris, both phenomenal corporate entrepreneurs. Doug, the founder of North Face Clothing, the founder of Esprit with his first wife. Chris, the CEO of Patagonia for 20 years, alongside Yvon Chouinard. And so Doug, with his second wife, Chris, they sold out of their businesses in the early 90s after this enormous success with North Face, Esprit, Patagonia. And they moved to Chile and Argentina. And the reason that Doug and Chris did that is because not only did they have corporate success, they also were closely committed to the natural environment. Doug was a climber, a skier. He could see the changes that were going on in the decades that he was alive. Anyway, just to summarize that story is moving to Chile and Argentina in the early 90s to where we are now, 30 years on, they have created and enlarged new national parks in those two countries, 15 million acres terrestrially and 30 million acres of marine reserves. So this is done on a big scale. And this was an example to me about how we can do things at scale, working both in the terrestrial and the marine environment to protect our ecosystems. And the significant thing about this is bringing economic vitality back to rural communities and local communities. So, it's looking at, for the business community about how you can do things at scale. And this was exciting to me. So this informed me about how I could contribute through Journeys with Purpose, about creating conservation and impact experiences with some of these remarkable leaders, like Chris and her team in Chile and Argentina, like an American Prairie Reserve in northern Montana, over 3 million acres of the northern Montana prairies, working with the Turner properties and family in North America. Again, working with large-scale European projects, the creation of the Yellowstone of Europe, Africa, Asia, Australasia, and so on. And so Journeys with Purpose is embarking on creating this portfolio, this global curriculum of conservation and impact experiences with these great leaders across the world, in order for the guests that participate in those experiences to better understand how they can contribute to change at scale. And that can be either through financial means, philanthropic impact investments, or some other form of advocacy and strong voice or CSR, pulling big corporate levers. So this is about experiential learning in the field with world-class experts across a global curriculum. So in terms of how people can participate, come and join a journey and come into the field. I mean, I know it shaped my life is that I'm a firm believer in this. We can learn so much across the Zoom screen, in the boardroom, but we really engage when we break bread with the people doing the work on the ground and meet those people. And that's one of the key things about this. We're people-centric in the way we approach our experiences and how we build the itinerary.
I can see the purpose now. You really want to move the people who go on these journeys to do something. So they go through these remarkable experiences, and then they're incentivized, they're catalyzed to do more in some positive way. And thereby, you're going to do restoration or nature conservation, or you're going to be better stewards of the environment and so on. And I can see this ties into your rewilding and landscapes scale restoration work, like rewilding Britain and Wild East and North, or the European Nature Trust, rewilding Europe. Can you talk about that work?
Okay, I mean that was a lot of work I did during COVID. There was no travel for anyone at that time. So what I wanted to do was continue to educate myself. We're all on a learning path. So helping others and in turn, learning myself from other organizations that were working in rewilding ecosystem restoration. And I know on this call, we're talking a lot about the natural world, natural history conservation and so on. But I cannot emphasize it enough, is all of the projects that we work with are integrated with community welfare and people. You know, I haven't come across a project that's successful that doesn't integrate people and a local economic vitality into the process. And I think that's where they're succeeding. You have traditional conservation on the one hand that's protecting what we have left, and then you have the new model of conservation, which is restoration and rewilding on the on this side, and that's driving forward at pace because that integrates people. So, you know, when we're talking with people, it's important to emphasize that, because I don't want people to say this is just about wildlife, and this is it's not. No, this is about the interconnected nature of our relationship with our land and our seas. And, you know, not only does it involve national parks and ecosystems, but it involves how we treat our soils through regenerative agriculture, how we look after communities on shorelines, and keep the local food systems flowing, and just basically working together as a whole. And obviously, this affects businesses in almost every way in which they work. You know, their relationship to the natural environment and how it flows through society.
But that thread, I mean, I can just see this constant thread, though, of execution. I mean, doing something. So not just sitting back, but actually being involved. And whether it's at the community level, trying to make systemic change at a larger regional level, trying to catalyze people, like on your page that you host, and then getting people to do more, and thereby basically, making the world a better place in the Earth ecosystems. You also are a fellow of the World Geographical Society, the Zoological Society of London, the Royal Society for Asian Affairs, the Scientific Exploration Society, and as earlier you mentioned, you're a photographer, published photographer. How do being associated with those groups help and inform your work and with journeys and with your rewilding work and so on?
I think I'm endlessly curious, and I enjoy conversations, and I enjoy, just as you said, Stephen, diversity and differences and contrasts. You know, I was lucky enough to become a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society in London many years ago now. And, you know, it is one of the oldest and greatest exploration, geographical, and travel societies in the world. And so just actually by going when I can to their flagship Monday evening lecture and talking to these extraordinary travelers and adventurers, some of which have achieved just magnificent feats and are very humble about it, that informs me. So it's always about this process of learning. And I described about, you know, the journeys with purpose. We always have an enormous amount of fun on our journeys. I mean, that's a lot of what this is about. But it is about experiential learning, perhaps without even realizing that people are sort of, you know, learning along the way. But it's all these conversations and dialogue in a very natural way that we're experiencing. The Zoological Society of London, you know, one of the great conservation organizations of the world, do a lot of project work and conservation work around the world. And then the others are the same. They are, if you like, connections to experts, peer groups, and interesting and interested people.
So you're communing with fellow curious travelers and people who have these different communities, but in which you can be both like one that you'll actually ideate in profound ways, right? And you'll get a transdisciplinary, interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary experience. And each one of those terms actually has a slightly different meaning. So it just enriches what you're doing. So, see, the more we do this in our dialogue, I can see it all makes sense. Now, earlier you talked about the Young Presidents Organization, and for the audience, people, it's such a private organization. A lot of people don't know about it. What can you tell me about the Young Presidents Organization, and when did you first join, and what do you hope to do with the Young Presidents Organization?
Okay, well, just very briefly, Young President's Organization, or YPO, was established in the US in 1950. So it's almost 75 years old now. And it has 35,000 members worldwide. So it has a large membership base. But as you say, Stephen, you know, it's still relatively unknown. But its economic power is pretty significant. You know, one of the metrics that we have is that the sales value of the companies that the members hold is over $9 trillion now. So in a sort of apples and oranges way, I know some members like to say it's world's third largest economy. So it has, you know, a significant economic influence. It is very broad-minded. It's a broad church. I joined 15 years ago now, so I've been a member some time. But within that broad membership, you know, I see, you see as well, Stephen, there's a very fast-growing aspect of impact within YPO. So YPO had its first Global Impact Summit in Costa Rica last year, and it's just rounded up its second Global Impact Summit in Rwanda just last month. And so, you know, what I see happening within YPO is a significantly growing aspect of impact. And it's not just about philanthropic impact. It's about impact investments. It's about CSR, ESG, how we can make ourselves more sustainable. The YPO International Board attended GIS this year in Rwanda, as an example. And so, you know, for my own work, you know, I try and play the best role that I can within it. You know, being involved in event committees and offsites and so on, and also within the embedded impact networks within YPO, the Sustainable Business Network, the Peace Action Network, the People Action Network, and the Planet Action Network, of which I'm a board member. So, you know, what I see, what I do, impact is growing quickly within YPO, you know, a large organization.
It's interesting, you know, there's these metrics, YPO, 35,000 servant leaders. There's spouse partners, and there may be over 20,000 of those. YPO Next Generation, 22,000. Mm-hmm. Let's say community of about 80,000, 150 countries, 500 chapters. But from what I recall, and this is public and some of the earlier interviews done, when you were at 27,000 servant leaders, that's when the total economic impact and annual repeat revenue, or ARR, was $9 trillion. But you're now at 35,000, so it's actually probably higher. It's probably like about 12, or I should say $9 trillion, but now it's probably a $12 trillion or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
These are figures from YPO 3.0, which was sort of formulated in 2017 and then kind of formally released in 2018 in a bigger way at your GLC Edge. The only reason I know that is because, again, the prior interviews I've done, so it's public. You know, we're not disclosing anything that's secret. So I think the number is bigger. In terms of,
I'm sure it is. You're right. I'm out of date on that. So that just represents even more economic influence and power that the membership has. And so, you know, what we see is that, as I say, that growing interest in how that can be brought to bear on some of our most challenging environmental and social issues. And that is great to see. And I see and I experience such incredible positive energy within YPO for that. It's so fantastic to see. And it's given me more energy in what I do as well.
So just a few minutes ago, you talked about you're a board member of the Planet Action Network. And then you indicated that you were, or you talked about the Global Impact Summit in Rwanda in 2024. And you're a travel network minister, in essence, in this community. Can you explain more about the Planet Action Network and what are the different impact networks within YPO? What's their specialties? And then, you know, there's this thing called the Global Impact Summit. What was the sort of the goal or the achievements from that, do you believe?
Yep.
And then maybe give sort of a wrapper around where you think YPO Impact will go in the next few years.
Okay, so In terms of giving some context on the impact networks within YPO, so I'm on the Planet Action Network board. I'm the learning officer, incoming vice chair. And the Planet Action Network is concerned with environmental, biodiversity, planetary and climate change issues, and how we as a network of members within the overall YPO membership can make a change in that aspect. And that's through learning events, speaking events, communicating with one another on business issues, businesses that we have, impact investments, and so on and so forth, as it relates to that topic. We then have the Peace Action Network, which is more around diplomacy and peace initiatives around the world. Thirdly is the People Action Network around social cohesion, community welfare, and humanity-based issues. And then finally, the Sustainable Business Network around just exactly what it says, sustainable business and impact investments, but really sort of focused on core business issues around sustainability. So that sort of sets in an architecture to the four impact networks within YPO. There is then the Global Impact Summit, which was initiated, as I said, some time ago and manifested in the first Global Impact Summit in Costa Rica last year. And this is really a gathering of all the impact networks within YPO to come together and to talk about the various initiatives that they are working on. The strapline this year for Global Impact Summit was from imagination into action. So it's absolutely, that combination between being creative, using your intuition, using your imagination and creativity to turn that into action. And as you know, Stephen, you know, with being with a group of business orientated leaders, it's a group of people that doesn't like to sit on their hands. You know, we like to get things done. And so it is absolutely action orientated, not a talking shop. It's to get things done. So the final element of what you asked for in terms of where this is going, one of the big themes of what we talked about is how we can actually integrate impact into the overall architecture of YPO and implement particular impact initiatives across the whole of the membership for people to take as they wish. You know, some people are more impact or CSR or ESG orientated than others, but to make it actually more systemic within YPO. And as I said, you know, we had the global board with us in Rwanda, representing all 35,000 members, spouses, partners, and YNG as young YPOs. And so I think that goes to show the significance of where this is going within YPO. And YPO is a denominator for a lot of other businesses and things that are going on around the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. And there's a demographic shift too, right? So, and the younger Gen Z alpha generation coming up, who are also within YPO as true, how do you manage the next generation and their interests, which are different, more socially oriented, more environmentally conscious? So in essence, then you're preparing the organization for the next generation as well, by embracing impact and saying, this is something that we have to pay attention to. You also have this podcast. Can you talk about the Spreading Rewilding Experience and Advocacy via Journeys with Purpose? So,
I've done a number of podcasts, and yes, I mean, I think you described it very well there, you know, advocating for rewilding through Journeys with Purpose and this experiences. So I've done that. That was with the Rewilding Institute in the US. I've done other podcasts as well, but we run our own webinar series too. And we run those with the world-class leaders like Chris Tompkins, Jonathan Bailey. We've got one coming up with Ben Goldsmith on his work around Conservation Collective and a particular foundation that he supports in Sri Lanka. And so I think as many ways as I can relay the message about the opportunities that are available to people, because that's what I feel like I am, is I know these stories and I want to be a vector for sharing these incredible successes on the ground and in the seas with others. And so, you know, I try and articulate it when I can. You know, I'm doing it with you. And the key thing about what I try and do with my storytelling and the stories that we tell on the ground and in the seas. And to the audience here, is we're focusing on the successes and the art of how great things can be achieved at scale. So that's what it's about, is to try and really shine a light on these known heroes and also the hidden heroes around the world who are working at scale and doing remarkable things. Your comment about the youth is something that we focus on a lot, is promoting youth, female, and diversity leadership and inclusion, both in the causes that we support on the ground, but also in our guest profile as well, the people that we want to come and journey with us. It's incredibly important that we have women traveling with us, diversity, young people. These are the change makers of the future, and probably the most significant change makers of the future.
You have Journeys with Purpose in this 2030 vision. I think it's really interesting. 30 by 30, designate 30% of the Earth's land and ocean areas as protected areas by 2030, and to 50 by 50, 30 million in donations and impact investments since 2019, 30,000 committed impact community change makers and activists, 30 million acres of land and 30 million acres of seas protected and restored. 30 million and JWB sales in 2030, and your commercial success driving mission success. Those are really interesting execution items, right? And in fact, you even have this 50 by 50, so maybe 50 by sooner. So,
well, let's hope. We did a lot of work on visioning out where we can make our contribution as an impact organization and business into the future. And 30 by 30 is a worldwide initiative that's undertaken by a host of organizations, being backed by business, by governments, by NGOs, where we as the world are looking to protect 30% of our land, 30% of our seas by 2030. And the reason for that is because these are our life systems. If we have a breakdown in our life systems, then we jeopardize the whole infrastructure. So number one, we want to commit to that. Number two, we want to make sure that we are walking the walk through both donations and philanthropic giving and also impact investments. I'm very keen on how we can deploy impact investments on the ground that deliver both a environmental, social, and economic return as well. Really at the core of what JWP is about, thirdly, is about building a community. It's about building a community who through these in the field experiences can understand how they can make a contribution at scale or at any level that they wish. And we want to do that at scale. There's obviously symmetry as well with the 2030. Is to look how we can partner with organizations that protect and restore 30 million acres of seas, 30 million acres of land. And then I know I'm running a business. Our mission success will be driven by our commercial success. So the more people that travel with us, the more people that can experience these remarkable successes around the world, that will drive our impact and mission. A note on the 50 by 50, this was really formulated by E.O. Wilson, who's been sort of described as the heir to Darwin, and a lot of his work around island geography. And in order to avoid turning not just Easter Island into a sort of depopulated and damaged ecosystem, but our entire planet, he postulated that we should protect and restore 50% of our land and our seas by 2050, which sounds like an enormous amount, but this is what will keep us healthy and thriving. It will help mitigate climate change by utilizing natural asset resources and give us the life systems and mitigate climate change that we can thrive off. So, yeah, I mean, these are big goals, but you got to think big.
Yeah, and I'm just reflecting on the 30,000 committed impact community change makers and activists. The research indicates that if you get 3.5% of any community, that community could be in your family, So you have a large family, you get 3.5% of your family, you get systemic change. It could be in a classroom, it could be in a school, in a city, region, a county, a province, a country. 3.5% is all it takes to get systemic change, right? But in my keynotes, I say, which 3.5%? So that's the issue, right? You got to make sure it's the ones who are into committed impact, community change, that 3.5%. So that 30,000 committed impact community change makers, I mean, you're even doing this within the YPO community, right? So.
Yes, I do. I mean, I think, there are just fantastic YPO impact change makers, and I take a lot of inspiration from them. And maybe I can just share the stories that I have on hand, and that will also contribute to their work as well. So, working together with YPO members, particularly those involved in impact, is joyful. I mean, it's wonderful. They're such good. We are such good kindred spirits together, and I hope I can help and make my contribution within YPO for that.
So we're down to the last few minutes, you are a B Corp, and you have your annual report for 2024. Are you going to allow that to be shared in your profile, by the way, so that people?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. It is a public document. I say to the team that I work with is, we want to put our colors on the mast here. Everything goes out and it's public. So, yes.
Yeah, and you're the world's highest scoring, and we mentioned this before, B Corp travel company, and you're focused on experiential impact travel, nature protection, restoration, local communities welfare, and as we indicated earlier, as I mentioned, awarded best for the world environment. You have your latest launch of restoring island land ecosystems, and you have a report on that, so we'll make sure that's in your profile. Your
Thank you.
Island Ocean Connection Challenge and Island Conservation, Scripps Institute of Oceanography and Rewild. You got links to that, so we'll make sure that's in your profile. I just want to make sure we capture all of these elements. You have a webinar this month with Ben Goldsmith of Conservation Collective on your journey together, the stewards of Sri Lanka. And let's get people registered if it's not too late. You have the Annabelle Hazelton's recent article on your journey to Carpathia. Maybe that could be a link to in your profile as well, and it's sourced. I could put it on one of our websites or link to your website. So I'll follow up on that. You just published a Tim Chester's piece in a Far magazine, and Tim weaves this sort of brilliant experience and so on. Can you talk about that and the work in rewilding Argentina as just some of your kind of thoughts on that and what I just mentioned? And then I'll ask for your closing comments.
Well, on Tim's piece in a Farm magazine, based in America, he was writing about his journey with us last year to Argentina, both to the north to Ibirá, the national park that was established there some years ago with the work of Tompkins Conservation and Rewilding Argentina, and then also to the south to Patagonia, Patagonia Azul, where they're doing a lot of marine work. And so this is timely. I've been in contact with the Rewilding Argentina team just today and this week. And this is about really him articulating the work they are doing in Argentina, across different biomes, across different parks. And I'll give you just one example as we come to a close, is that we had a group out in this new national park in the northeast of Argentina a couple of years ago, a park called Ibirá. And this is a new park that's been developed across vast wetlands. So there's significant wetlands as the Pantanal is in Brazil. And this is 2 million acres. And how did this park, how did they manage to put this park together? And the executive director, Sophia Heinemann, when she was asked this question, really boiled it down to three different things. Not a word of nature conservation. It was about politics, number one. Political dialogue with the local communities, municipalities, provincial government, national government. Two, it's about good old-fashioned marketing and comms, getting the message out about what wants to be achieved. And three, it's about economics. It's about bringing economic vitality back into the local communities, and ensuring that the young people were encouraged and inspired to stay locally. So this is sort of, helped tell the story of that. Iber is a fantastic story. It's about the return of the jaguar to an ecosystem where it had been extirpated for 70 years, which mirrors the return of the wolves to Yellowstone. An amazing story. And Tim tells that very well.
So this is our last question. We have about a minute left. What are your final recommendations you want to leave the audience? I guess your life's work is a recommendation, but what's your final recommendation?
I think it is about embracing, restoring our relationship with the natural world. And there are a lot of things that have happened in my lifetime to encourage me to disintermediate myself, if you like, from the natural world, and I fought against it successfully, I hope. And the amount of economic opportunity and all the other services that our natural world brings to us is to embrace it and to think of nature as our ally and our opportunity going forward. And please travel with us as well and enjoy and explore some of these remarkable people, projects, and places, all with remarkable purpose.
Yeah, for the benefit of all and all Earth ecosystems. So thank you again for coming in and sharing your journey, Duncan, with our audience, and just a remarkable, outstanding contributions you're making across so many domains. And all of us are grateful for all of the work. And you are the North Star, like your chapter, the integrated chapter. So thank you again.
Stephen, thank you very much indeed. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the Brand Called You.